Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Colonel Donald Dellinger, Deployment Director of the Continuous Process Improvement Initiative within the National Guard Bureau. Also joining us from IBM is Phil Spencer. So, Colonel, I talked to many of my guests about the use of collaboration and partnership among agencies and private sector to achieve mission results. For the CPI initiative within the National Guard Bureau, how are you folks leveraging partnerships to improve management operation and program outcomes?
Well, I'll be quite honest with you, Mike. Right now, we're not leveraging a lot because we're in the infancy. We're just trying to get energy going behind our program and getting projects completed. But we have thought about this a lot. I think making those partnerships, we have a unique, I think, opportunity here in the National Guard, which I'll be pursuing here in the next year. It's one of my future goals, not in the current goal for this year because of what we have on the plate. But within the National Guard and the partnership within the state, we think there's a great opportunity for the states to partner with quality type organizations within that state and businesses to share best practices, to be able to go and do site visits and to see what's going on in industry. And I think the Air Force does a really good job of leveraging the corporate relationship. And I think we have a unique opportunity as the National Guard because of our natural relationships that we have within the state already. And so that's kind of the next progression that we see is developing those types of relationships. And so that building a partnership with an organization within the state near units where they can actually have kind of a resource to go back and share information and get assistance and help that doesn't necessarily have to be a tail back to us. I think leveraging what the other services are doing is very important, especially within DOD and with the financial future that we face as an enterprise, and not just looking at it from a single organizational lens, but looking at a DOD-wide lens. Because really, at the end of the day, the resources that we get are not our resources. They're the taxpayers' resources. And with everything that's been going on and what's been in the news lately, I think we as leaders owe it to the nation to be as efficient as possible with the resources that we're given. And I think in order to do that, looking at things within DOD, a prime example would be, you know, aircraft is aircraft. So if you have within, I think the Navy had a great program on air fuel. So why would that not be able to go across the whole enterprise? So I think leveraging what all the other services are doing and building those relationships. And, you know, I'll be happy to say that I think the reason why we're so far along too in the short period of time that we've come is because we've taken the best practices and we've seen the obstacles that other services have had when they've implemented. And so we've bypassed some of those issues. Prime example is a strategic alignment for us. Right away, right off the bat, if a state doesn't do a strategic alignment, we don't send anybody to training. So it's not just, hey, let's just go do projects. You know, and we took that from the lessons learned from the other organizations that have been doing this. And so right off the bat, one of the criteria is to do a strategic alignment, so ensuring that from the get-go, we have some type of alignment, project alignment to strategy to help add value to the organization. So I think collaboration is key, and I think those relationships are very important. We're at the infancy of that, but we do have a plan to kind of to fan out and grow that as we grow as a program.
Don, you're obviously very passionate about providing value to the Guard and using CPI to provide the operational excellence that the Guard is going to be needs now and will be looking for in the future. Could you talk a little bit, though, about an important element of that value, which is to innovate processes in addition to improving them, and the interplay between innovation and CPI? Does it tend to encourage innovation? Does it tend to stifle it? What's your perspective on that?
Well, I think that's an interesting question because I think a lot of people look at the rigidity of how rigid the methodology is. I mean, it's a very rigid methodology if you look at it, right, based off of the scientific method. So a lot of people will look at that right away and say, well, using that type of methodology, being so rigid and following steps will hinder innovation. But I think it's just the opposite. I think it encourages innovation because if you look at the heart of Lean Six Sigma, it's not about some individual sitting in his office figuring out what the solution is. It's about collaborating. It's about team building. It's about finding solutions across the enterprise for everybody that adds value to that process, not just one person that touches that process. And when you bring those people together and the teams together, and you're getting input from the people that are actually working the process, I think that's where you get the innovation and the creativity. I think the power of Lean Six Sigma, too, is that, you know, you do risk mitigation. So you know what the risks are. So I think you can take a chance and be creative on a solution that you select if you've identified the risks and have a risk mitigation strategy. And the other power, I think, is once you develop your metrics and your measurement systems, you'll know whether or not it's okay for you to take risk on something if you think that the outcome is going to be great. And I think the measurement system allows you to make those adjustments and those tweaks as you go through implementing your solution. So if you start to see problems creeping up based off of you taking a chance on doing something creative and innovative, you're able to make those adjustments because you're able to track how well it's working or not working and go back and look at the process itself and make those adjustments. I think the real challenge, just like anything, is the leadership. Our leaders creating a culture of innovation? Are they allowing people to take chances, or are you in a defect, zero defect culture where people take chances, and if they don't work, they're put off to the side, or are leaders willing to accept risk? But with accepting risk and innovation, I think you have to be, one, patient, and two, accept failure. You have to be able to accept failure because not everything is going to work. Not everything is going to be a 100% solution. I know sometimes as fast-paced as everything is, we fail to accept that type of risk because we're so results-oriented. And so we look at it as if that we have a failure, it's a reflection on us, or we have to have results now and we can't afford to have something that's not going to work. But I would argue that sometimes, depending on the problem and the situation, you need to take that time and you need to instill that type of culture where people aren't afraid to be innovative and go out there and take some risks, because that's the only way the organization is really going to grow, and that's the only way that you're really going to capitalize on your intellectual capital. I think you'll see now that organizations that maximize their intellectual capital, grow it, let people think and make decisions, are the organizations that are flourishing. And those that don't end up losing their intellectual capital because they go somewhere else where they feel wanted and that their voice is heard. And I think that's just a natural tendency for us. I think everybody wants to do the right thing. The question is, how well as leaders do we cultivate that and draw that out of people to make the organization better?
Don, I'd like to focus on the future. What are some of the major opportunities and challenges you'll encounter in the future? And how do you envision your organization evolving to meet those challenges and seize those opportunities?
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges that we're going to have, Mike, is going to be on sustainment. Most of our, like for me, I'll only be in this job for probably two more years. So a lot of what we're doing on change management, I hate to say this, a lot of it's based off of personalities. Mm-hmm. And so the challenge is, for me, is then how do I bring up my staff, which is very limited, to continue down the same road that I'm going, at least in principle. So I don't know how many times you've seen when a new leader comes that the whole organization takes a huge shift in a different direction. How do you maintain the momentum? And I think that's part of the sustainment piece that when we go talk to senior leaders about is, how do they get it instilled in their leaders so when they leave, it's just the way that they do business? And I think that's a huge challenge. Part of the good thing in the Guard is that a lot of us stay in the same location, so to speak. So if you're an Oregon Guardsman or a Texas Guardsman, you're usually staying within that state National Guard organization. You may move around different units within that organization, but you stay within that organization. So I think the selection of the correct people to training, to be exposed to this, and the leadership focusing on this and seeing value, because we put things in our toolkit that we know work, right? So as we go through and we learn and we experience and we lead and we learn from other leaders, things that work, we put in the toolkit. Things that we don't work, we know to avoid or not to do. And so I think when people are exposed to this and they see it working and they see the results, you gravitate to things that will make you successful. And I think that's very important on the succession planning for us, is tackling this at all three levels at the same time. And what I mean by that is tackling it at the future leader level, which to me is your entry-level practitioners. So they get into the methodology, they work a few projects, they see how it works, they take the tools and use it in their everyday. And as they go through their career, now they're becoming in positions of influence, so where they can influence how things are done. The next level is at the project sponsor 06 level, which is a challenging piece, because they have to get a job done for their boss. And if this doesn't impact them getting the job done for their boss on the 5-meter target, they're not necessarily looking at the 50-meter target, because they think if they don't get the 5-meter target down, there's not going to be a 50-meter target because they'll have another job. So getting them to look at it as an investment for the betterment of the organization and for the future leaders is very important. And then the next step is, of course, the executive leaders, because their sponsorship and them being real champions of the effort is very powerful, because they have the ability and the authority to get people to come on board or move people out that don't want to come on board. And so I think them buying in and then having a three-pronged approach that educates, communicates, is very important. And by tackling it, that hopefully we'll get a sustained program.
So what advice would you give someone who's thinking about a career in public service or perhaps the National Guard?
I would say that public service is something that's very rewarding. It has been for me. I think I've been kind of fortunate because with my father being in the Air Force, I got to travel around and I lived in some third world countries. So I kind of got at a very early age, I had a kind of a different perspective on what was being provided by the United States. I know that sounds kind of tacky, but it made you really realize how good we have it over here, how the rest of the world lives. And I would say that public service is something that is very admirable to do. It's very selfless, because definitely the financial rewards are not what it could be out in the private sector. But it's intuitively and intrinsically, it's very rewarding in the fact that you know that you're making a difference and that you're protecting the country that you love, and you're adding value. And I think that's very important. I think everybody in their lifetime wants to say, when it's all said and done, that you've added value or you did something that you can be proud of. And I think being a public servant is something that you can be very proud of at the end of the day.
Well, Don, I want to thank you for your time today. But more importantly, Phil and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service to the country.
Well, I wanted to thank you for this opportunity and to let everybody out there know that the National Guard organization and leadership is dedicated to providing the best value for the nation and protecting the nation and the values of the nation. And we appreciate everybody's support. The Guard has really come a long way since September 11, 2001, both in its capability and its resourcing, but more so in the support of the nation. And I will say that I'm very thankful whenever I travel. Doesn't time go by when I'm in uniform that people don't thank me for my service? And all I can say is it's a privilege to serve this country and the citizens of the United States.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Colonel Donald Dellinger, Deployment Director of the Continuous Process Improvement Initiative within the National Guard Bureau. My co-host from IBM has been Phil Spencer. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.